Heavenly Father, we just thank you for the message you have for us today. I pray that you would give us ears to hear and give Ms. Tate a voice to speak and to be able to tell us what we need to know from you. I ask this in your name. Amen.
Thanks. That prayer about the voice was very specific because when I have 5 minutes left to go in my morning session, my throat got real scratchy and I had to stop talking for a little while. So, just in case, if the oxygen masks lower from the ceiling, don't panic. And while the speaker is coughing and trying not to explode into the microphone, just speak quietly among yourselves until normalcy is restored and we'll be just fine. I'm going to do the best I can, so just bear with me. It's a good thing that I talk about being transparent in real life, because when your eyes start watering and you start hacking and coughing and lose your voice when you're speaking in front of a group of people, that's about as real and transparent as you can get. So, welcome. I'm really glad to have y'all here today. I think the topic of interruptions is probably the most popular one that I speak on, because that's where we deal with everything in daily life, isn't it? Just to give you a little bit more background about me, the four boys that Rebecca mentioned are now 24 years old, 21, 19, and 15. This is my 18th year as a homeschool mom. I have three more to go. The oldest three are all in college. I've been a single mom for 14 years. The boys were 9, 6, 4, and 6 months old when their dad left to marry someone else. That was a long time ago. And I say that not for any kind of pity, but sort of context. So you see, when I'm talking about juggling dealing with interruptions and juggling all the responsibilities of life, I've got a bunch of different contexts. I've also had a home business for 30 years, even longer than I've been a mom and a homeschooling mom. So whatever your different circumstances of life are, there's all these different things that come and impact us that we have to find a way to balance amidst the interruptions of life. This session is probably my most hands-on practical tips. I usually speak fast, and I have a lot to cover, so buckle your seatbelts and grab your pen and paper. And don't be overwhelmed by the number of tips that I'm going to give you. This is sort of a buffet, and you listen to all of it, and then you pick the ones you want to put on your plate and take home to dinner. Okay, because if you try to implement everything I say when you go home, you're going to go crazy, and that's going to have the opposite effect of what I want it to do. So listen, and as you listen, listen for one or maybe two things that you can put into practice when you go home that you think will make a positive difference in your life and your family's life. Because it's hard to get anything done when you're constantly being interrupted, isn't it? You know exactly what I'm talking about because you deal with it every day. You're desperately trying to accomplish some task, whether it's folding the 17th load of laundry or cooking dinner or teaching the phonics lesson or grading the math lesson, and all of a sudden the phone rings, and then the dryer buzzes, and the baby cries, and you suddenly hear a mysterious crash from, sounds like it's probably coming from the kitchen, and the doorbell rings, and Calgon can't even take you away because how are you going to get 5 minutes alone in the bathroom, right? So no matter how well we manage our time, there are always going to be interruptions that undermine our best efforts. I am defining interruptions very broadly as anything that keeps us from doing what we need to do by distracting us from our priorities and making us lose our focus. That means that in addition to what you might normally think of as an interruption, like a child tugging on you or a phone call, I'm also going to talk a little bit about things like the negative impact of clutter, too many activities, and even our own emotions and attitudes can be a distraction that interrupts us from focusing on our true priorities. So like I said, very broadly, anything that keeps us from doing what we need to do by distracting us. Interruptions can come from strangers or family. They can come from casual acquaintances, business associates, friends. They can involve good news or bad news. Not every interruption is bad news. Sometimes it's good news, but it can still be distracting. They can involve ordinary events, illness, surprising opportunities. But whatever the source is, they distract us from what we need to do, they hinder our productivity, and they upset our balance. even worse, they can trigger bad attitudes and make us frustrated and irritable. Now, when I like to say that I've test-driven a lot of the mistakes that I speak about. Unfortunately, this thing about bad attitudes and getting frustrated and irritable has also been test-driven personally by me. So one of the worst things, though, about interruptions, especially when they come from within our family, is that they can confuse us about what's really important. Because the fact is that our families can sometimes distract us, but if we view them as a hindrance rather than a blessing, we're losing the whole point. And so I want to encourage you not to fall to the temptation of seeing your kids as the interruption and the hindrance rather than the blessing, even though practically speaking, sometimes they are the source of an interruption. You see that balance right there. There's three main sources of interruptions and distractions. Activities. The second one is a real technical term. You may not want me to spell it out for you. Stuff. Stuff. The possession. And I'm also fluent in sarcasm. And the third main category that we're going to spend the most time on is people. And the people who can interrupt us, we can interrupt ourselves. We can be interrupted by family. And then there's everyone else on the planet who is a potential source of interruption. One of the main things I want you to remember is the concept of opportunity cost. This means that when you choose to do one thing, you're saying no to everything else you could do at the same time. So when you choose to respond to an interruption, you are saying no to whatever you were already doing or whatever else you could be doing. When you choose to add a new activity in life, you're saying no to other things you could be doing at that time. We all have trouble saying no. I'm going to be talking about that quite a bit. But you can either say no actively or by default, because anytime you choose how to use your time, you're saying no to all the other things you could do. So opportunity cost, when you allow that interruption to get you off track, by saying yes to that opportunity, you're saying no to the plans you already had. Sometimes that's actually what you should do, and we'll talk a little bit about how to discern when to say yes to the interruption, because sometimes that interruption can be a sign from God of something else that he has for you to take care of right then. So I'm going to talk real quickly about stuff and activities, and then we're going to focus on people and how to handle to all the different kinds of interruptions that can come from the people in our lives and the people that aren't really in our lives, but they interrupt us anyway. Telemarketers, I'm looking at you. So, and if you have a solution, please let me know, because that national do not call registry does not work. My phone number is on the mother of all telemarketing lists, as far as I can. Okay, so stuff. Stuff is just all the physical things that get in our way, our possessions. You know why this is a problem. It slows us down. If you can't find your car keys or your kids can't find their shoes when you're all getting ready for church on Sunday morning, and you're hurry, 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 everyone, and get out the door, we're going to be late for church, and we don't want to be late for God's house, and you all get there, and how worshipful is your attitude by the time you get there? And it goes back to something as simple as the missing shoes or the missing car keys, and then to how you respond to the missing shoes and the missing car keys. It triggers bad attitudes. In my house, one of our rules is your shoes belong on your feet or in the closet. My boys think that they belong all right inside the front door. They're supposed to keep their shoes in their room. I keep my Crocs near my office door because I'm the mom and I make the rules. And if I need to go into the door or take the dog out or something, I want them handy. But my boys borrow my Crocs because they're the only pair of shoes, hypothetically, that's available. So one day, I was looking for my shoes to go check the mail, and they weren't there. So naturally, I assumed one of the boys had taken them and not put them back. So I gently questioned each one of the boys in turn. Are you the one who took my Crocs? Why did you take them? Where did you put them? How could you do this? No, ma'am. I'm Mississippi girl, so my boys say things like no, ma'am, and yes, ma'am. They're real courteous. And no, ma'am, I didn't take your Crocs. So about 2 hours later, I go sit down at my computer desk and stick my feet under the desk, and guess what they hit? Yeah, there they are. I had left my own shoes in the wrong place and had cast false accusations among all four of my children And so I went back and apologized to them, and they were very gracious and forgiving, but gave us a good laugh. But it also reminded me of how something as simple as a missing pair of shoes could even hinder family relationships if we allow it to. So what can we do about it? We can sip water after every paragraph so I can continue telling what we can do about it. A place for everything and everything in its place. Those shoes had a place and I didn't put them there. Paper is a huge category for a lot of people, even though a lot of people are going mostly digital. Some of us still have an addiction to pieces of trees. So you can have hanging files, folders, notebooks, project boxes. Look for ways to put specific pieces of paper in specific places. Unfortunately for me, sometimes that means the specific place is this pile, this pile, this pile, and this pile. But the more I organize them, the more I can find what I need when I need it. If you can replace piles with lists, instead of having a pile for each project I'm working on, I have a list that reminds me of all the steps I need, and then I keep all the pieces for that project in a box that I can easily find, and it reduces the clutter, because clutter, for most people, is a visual distraction, and it's just depressing to live in an environment that's constantly cluttered. Make children responsible for their own stuff. Now, everything I'm going to talk about is dependent on the ages and stages of your kids, how old they are, how responsible they are. So if you have a 6-month-old, obviously you can't make him responsible for picking up his own toys and putting them in the drawer. But you can start teaching your kids increasing levels of responsibility as they get older and more mature, because the more they manage their own stuff, the less you have to. If stuff is a problem for you, I highly recommend Don Aslett's book with one of the best titles I've ever heard, Clutter's Last Stand. That is a great book if this is a huge challenge for you. That's all I'm going to say about stuff, because there are lots of resources out there about how to organize your physical possessions. I'm going to take it up a level now to activities. That's the second major category, stuff and activities. I'll probably step on some toes here. You can edit your stuff. I'm a book editor, so I use all these editorial analogies. You can edit your stuff by keeping it, getting rid of it, or rearranging it. You can do the same thing with your life. You can edit your life by eliminating, delegating, and outsourcing. Those are three different ways to get rid of things that you personally have to do. I'm going to be talking more about that in the Freedom session tomorrow morning or afternoon, I forget which it is, but eliminate is one of the E's in the word freedom. It's one of the strategies. But the idea of saying no to things or delegate, maybe they don't have to be done at all, or maybe they have to be done, but you don't have to be the one to do them, so you can delegate them to someone else. Prioritize. Your kids cannot possibly participate in every potential homeschool activity that's available. They can't do 6 sport teams and dance and piano and band and soccer and all these other things. You have to choose for them as well as for yourself. None of those things are bad things, but you can be so constantly in that flurry of activities that you never have the time at home. One way to choose among the activities for your kids, I know that some people say one activity per kid per season. For my boys, it was scouts, and then a couple of them ran cross country later on. I really put off the sports thing as long as possible because I didn't like getting up on Saturday mornings to drive to events, but it was worth it. But that leads me to my next point, which is focus on things that facilitate your children's individual passions. My oldest son developed a real passion for running. It made a huge difference in his life. I still don't completely understand why anybody would want to run if nobody was chasing them, but I've seen the difference it's made in his life because it developed around age 14. And if you've ever had a 14-year-old boy, you know how important this is. It developed self-discipline in his life, from the practice, both in groups and on his own. And that self-discipline from the running spilled over into other areas of his life. It changed his mood. It changed his attitude. And so that became the thing that I did get up for at 5 o'clock on Saturday morning to go see him run in a cross-country meet. because that was really important to him and it made a difference. So find the thing that your kid really cares about and focus on that instead of spreading everything too thin. And the more kids you have, the more necessary it is to be particular about how many outside activities you choose. Opportunity does not equal obligation. That applies to you as well as your kids. Opportunity does not equal obligation. Just because something can be done doesn't mean that you should say yes to it. If most of us have a really hard time saying no, if somebody asks you to coordinate the bake sale with 16 volunteers and 5,000 dozen cookies or whatever, most of us will just say, oh yeah, sure, I can do that. Just out of knee-jerk reaction or whatever it may be. Teach the Bible study, lead the homeschool co-op class on poetry, whatever it is, and you have to think and pause. Either say no if you already know you don't have time, but don't say the quick yes. Stop and think, how is this going to fit in with what I'm already doing, and what am I going to have to stop doing to make room for this new thing? Because your life is already full, right? Do any of y'all have an extra 2 or 3 hours around each day that you don't know what to do with? Because if you do, I want to talk to you afterwards and add another chapter to my book. I haven't ever met anybody who has more time than they really need. So if you're going to add something else in, you have to take something out. So before you say yes to an opportunity and turn it into an obligation for yourself, consider how it fits the rest of your life. Say no to good things in order to say yes to the best. Now we're going to look at the really painful category, which is other people. Yourself, family, and everyone else. Interruptions and hindrances don't just come from outside of us. We can be our own worst enemies. Bad attitudes. This is the steel-toed boots portion of this presentation because I'm probably going to stomp all over your toes. I'm certainly stomping on my own. Bad attitudes can make you lose focus on your priorities, just like the shoe example I mentioned earlier. Here's one that is hard, especially for homeschool moms to accept. You know that pride can be a hindrance? Have you ever felt like you're indispensable, that you're the only one who can get something done? Now you see how it's subtle, because it's okay to know that you can do something really well and to be willing to do it. But if you think you're indispensable, very few people are indispensable. The mother of a nursing infant is probably the only occupation we can say is something that's truly indispensable. But there's usually more than one person who can do something. Sometimes, if you're the person who's always the go-to person, always gets stuff done, sometimes if you step out of the way, you allow someone else to rise to the occasion and to help. Whining is a bad habit that can be a distraction. I have a strict no whining rule and try to follow it the best I can. Now, this next one is really hard for me to say because I'm a book editor, right? What do book editors try to do? They try to make words perfect. Perfectionism is a hindrance. Got it out. Don't let fear of mistakes keep you from trying. You can't start out winning the race the first time you try to walk around the block. But don't let that keep you from trying something new. So don't let perfectionism be an attitude that hinders you from accomplishing things you would really like to do. Fear. Fear of missing out, fear of doing badly, fear of being embarrassed. That's another attitude that can hold you back. And I'm just kind of hitting the highlights here. A big one is, how often do you find yourself saying, I can't? Not an intentional I'm saying no to this, but, oh, I just can't do that. Try changing your language to yourself from, I can't do that, which that shuts you down, right? There's no options, to asking yourself the question, how can I do that? And it opens your minds to possibilities. This isn't some new age mumbo jumbo. This is just basically changing what you're saying to yourself. I mentioned this in the earlier session today, and one of the moms came by the booth to say that right there, ask how can I, instead of saying I can't, had been the thing that helped her see how she might be able to go back to homeschooling her kids in a difficult situation. I'm like, praise God for that. So that was the one thing she grabbed and held on to. But we can hold ourselves back from doing things that we need to do by having that negative attitude of not being able to do it. Okay, guilt is something that can hold us back. Now, there is true guilt. When we are sinning, when we're being lazy or overindulgent, that's wrong, and we need to repent and change our ways. But I think for homeschool parents and for moms in particular, that false guilt is a bigger problem. Because have you ever felt guilty for taking care of yourself? Sometimes it's like we have this battle of who got the least sleep last night. And if you're well rested, you feel guilty because everybody else is in so much worse shape. So I see a lot of grief. Y'all know what I'm talking about, don't you? You can't be all things to all people. And while motherhood and all parenthood, but I'm speaking especially to moms here, involves service and sacrifice, don't let that descend into martyrdom, because it's not pretty. If you are not taking care of yourself, you can't take care of anybody else. And again, that inappropriate sense of obligation. It's easy to kind of want to be all things to all people, but you just can't. You have to choose. The way to avoid self-indulgence is self-discipline. We have a lot of freedom as homeschoolers. And if you're an entrepreneur, you have a lot of freedom to run your business the way that you want to. But we have to be careful not to abuse that freedom. I haven't met any homeschool parents who weren't self-disciplined and doing a great job with their kids. But we're accountable to ourselves and to God rather than dropping the kids off somewhere every day and not having to take that daily action on it. So discipline yourself to take care of all those responsibilities as a homeschooler. Meet challenges with action, not with avoidance. I know that the bigger the task that I have to tackle, the more likely I am to put it off to when I have more time or when I can think about it. I'm especially bad about this with emails. If it's an important email, I think I don't have time to answer it right now, and then it slips into the box until it's embarrassing to answer because it's so late. If I had just met that with action instead of avoiding it, it would have been less of an interruption in the long haul. You have to take care of yourself. Moms, I think, and particularly homeschool moms, are the worst at doing this. We're so busy taking care of everybody else that we don't take care of ourselves. And I really want to encourage you to, again, this is going to depend on the ages of your kids. If you have a lot of little bitty kids, a nursing infant, kids who aren't sleeping through the night, whatever, this is going to be hard. But you have absolutely got to find a way to get some rest, or you're not going to be able to function. What do they say when you're on a plane flight, right? If we encounter a problem and the oxygen mask drop from the ceiling, whose mask do you put on first? You put on your own oxygen mask first. Because if you try to put the oxygen mask on a terrified toddler before putting on your own, you're going to pass out, and then the toddler's going to pass out, and you're not going to be actually helping. But by taking care of yourself, and this is not that sort of worldly, you know, me first kind of thing. This is taking care of yourself in order to be able to take care of your family as well. And remember that you're modeling for your children. So often we go into overdrive and overwhelm, and we're just drooping and wilted. And we teach them this is how you live life, constantly overwhelmed, constantly with more to do than you can possibly manage. And that's setting a bad example and building bad habits in them as well. And it took me a long time to realize that. And when I suddenly did, it was like, oh, wow, I didn't even think about that. I was just thinking about getting stuff done. And yet I'm teaching them that this is what life looks like, always frantic, always harried and hurried. So keep in mind that how you approach life is setting a model for your children to follow. I encourage you to develop a support network, and that includes family, friends, homeschool co-ops, your church. Have other people that you can lean on to help you stay on track. Now, we've looked at stuff and activities and people, and we've looked at how we can be our own interruptions. Now we're going to look at family. When I wrote my book and I was talking with my editor and I started talking about including family in the section on interruption, she said, "Mary Jo, I don't really know if you can say that." And I understood her concern, because just like I said, our families are our ministry and our mission. But that's where the rubber meets the road, isn't it? Where do most of our interruptions come from in the daily round? It's usually from our kids. And so I want to honor what she was thinking in terms of not demeaning the family while still acknowledging the daily reality that it's the kids who are constantly distracting us from what we think we need to be doing. It's important to be available to our kids, but it's also important for them to learn age-appropriate boundaries, because not everything is an emergency. We need to find a balance between accessibility, which allows interruptions, and boundaries, which prevent interruptions. You probably know all about accessibility. You're available to your kids on demand 24/7, it seems like, a lot of times. But depending on the ages and stages of your kids, maybe they can learn to wait a little while before interrupting. And it's not just good for you, it's also good for them to learn, even that one way of learning delayed gratification, isn't it? You may not interrupt when mom's on the phone unless it's an emergency. Boundaries are harder for us. We're usually good at being accessible and harder at drawing boundaries, especially with our kids. Being accessible does not mean being available on demand all the time, with the exception of that nursing infant. This depends very much on the ages and maturity level of your kids. My kids are all older now, so I can set much stricter boundaries about my work time than I could when they were little. But it's good for them to learn that as well as me. Whatever boundaries you establish, be sensitive to important interruptions. Sometimes whatever you think you're working on, and you've got a kid, probably a preteen or a teen with an emotional crisis, that's not the thing where you want to close the door and say, "Come back in 50 minutes when I've finished this task I'm working on." That's where you say, "No, this is the important thing. This is what matters." You have to use discernment. And that's what's so hard, because I'm not giving you like a 4-point graph where you can chart it and come out with a quadrant that tells you which thing to do on Tuesday afternoon. You still have to use discernment. I'm trying to give you principles that you can use to apply in any particular situation that comes up. If you have a home business, for example, you can work in designated chunks of time. For a lot of families, the way this works is that mom works with the kids in the morning on their school lessons, and then in the afternoon, if she has a home business, maybe the kids have free time or independent lessons they can do on their own, or reading or playtime or whatever, and she works on the business. Or maybe dad teaches some of the lessons at night when he comes home from the office. There's no one right way to homeschool. There's no one right way to manage your time. The one right way to homeschool, get ready for this, it is the way that works best for you and your family. It may not be the same for your family as it is for your best friend's family, or that one homeschooling goddess that everyone knows who somehow manages to do everything apparently just right. Some of you know her, don't you? The way that works is what's best for your family. I typically work for an hour at a time, and even when my kids were somewhat younger, I would tell them, "Okay, I'm going in my office now. Do you need me for anything? Here's your math test. Here's your reading assignment," whatever it is. And anything else can wait unless there's an emergency. If your kids are young, it's fairly traditional to use their nap time as your work time. But don't sacrifice your own sleep. If you have young kids, a nap may be the most important thing you can do during your kids' nap time. One of the ways to teach your kids not to interrupt you is to ask them, "How would you handle it if I weren't here?" Somehow, I managed to teach my boys not to interrupt my naps. I would nap when they weren't napping, when they were older. And they learned that the house had better be on fire if they were going to come wake me up from a nap that I needed desperately. However, I did manage to communicate this over into my work time, because they would come in and out. So you have to learn how to define what an emergency is. My youngest son, who's down there helping me at the booth right now, when he was about 12 years old, he on his own would figure out, he would open the door to my office and look at my computer screen. If he saw a Word document on the screen, he knew I was editing, so he would quietly leave and wait till I came out. It's like, whoa, that is really cool that you figured that out. If he saw email, he might speak to me because the email could be either personal or business. On the other hand, if he saw Facebook on the screen, he was free to interrupt, right? So you can teach them guidelines for figuring out whether they can interrupt you. You need boundaries of space as well as boundaries of time. Now, I'm going to talk about this mostly in the context of home business. If you don't have a home business, think about how this might apply in some other aspect of your life. Maybe you have volunteer work that you do, or you teach a Sunday school class, or you work with the IAHE or something like that. And so whatever it is, you still need some uninterrupted time, even if it's just for lesson planning or personal Bible study or whatever. If you have a home business, it's useful to spend lots of time in the family room or the kitchen. I know there's one homeschool curriculum author who reportedly writes all of his books in the living room with his family all around. I don't know how that's even possible, but it's rumored. Generally speaking, if you do some kind of work that requires focused concentration, it's better to have a separate room, an office with a door that you can close when you need to. It keeps the kids out, and it makes a psychological barrier for you too, so that you can turn work off when you leave that room. What if you don't have a room? Get creative. Maybe you've got a big walk-in closet you could turn into an office. One friend I know, the dad has his computer desk in the foyer, the front entrance of their house, and even though it doesn't have a door separating it from the rest of the house, it's sort of a designated space that's his work area. Sometimes we have to be separated from our kids to have more time to spend with them. This is ironic, and it sounds like I'm messing with your minds. But having some quiet, concentrated time to focus on a task can actually give you more time with your kids, not less. Because let's say that you have a task to do. Let's say that I need to edit 10 pages of a book and that it's going to take me an hour to do that. Actually, it'd probably be more like 5 pages an hour. But let's say 10 and be ambitious. And if I have that hour alone in my office to edit those 10 pages, I'm finished. But if the kids are constantly in and out and I'm getting up to change the load of laundry and the kids are distracting me, what about the math lesson and this? Not only is it going to take me 4 hours instead of one to finish that, but I'm going to do a worse job of it because I've lost my train of thought. And so the kids haven't actually gained more time with me. They've actually lost 3 hours by making it take longer. You see how that works? So how do you have that quiet, concentrated time for whatever it is that you need to do, particularly your home business, but for anything else you need to focus on? Well, traditionally, the kids leave, right? You drop them off at school, and then you've got all this alleged time to yourself, but that's not what we're doing. They can go have play dates with friends, or you can trade time with another homeschool parent or something like that, but there are other ways, too. Another option is you leave. I've written lots of book chapters at a coffee shop or a cafe or something like that. When I wrote my first book, actually the local Mexican restaurant was referred to as my office away from home. You can get really creative with a bowl of cheese dip and chips. So you can hire a babysitter or a mother's helper to help while you're at home. Babysitter would be somebody who's older, responsible enough to keep the kids while you leave, somebody you really, really trust, obviously. But a mother's helper can be younger. For me, I had preteen and young teen girls who were homeschooled students where I knew their families well. They had lots of experience caring for younger siblings, and they would come to my house, take care of my boys, feed them. I would nurse the baby, pass them off to Kathy or Catherine or Molly, and then I would go upstairs and work on my book for a couple hours. She would rock the baby to sleep, make the Kraft macaroni and cheese from the blue box. Yeah, that's what I fed the kids back then. And do the laundry and read the kids a story. And then the next time the baby needed to be fed, she'd come get me. And so I had that uninterrupted time to work, but the kids were well taken care of with someone. And we still just adore those girls who helped take care of them. You can provide activities to keep the kids occupied. Again, this depends on how mature they are and how old they are. Maybe you have certain toys or games that they can only use when you're working. If you let them watch videos or play computer games, for example, maybe you limit the access to those to the times when you need to be working in your home business or doing your lesson planning or whatever, so that they're motivated to use that time without interrupting you. Okay, this is my favorite one. I've mentioned several times about not interrupting you unless it's an emergency. Do you know how hard it is to define emergency for kids? The problem is, I want Legos for Christmas is not, in fact, an emergency. Surprising as that may be to your children. Can I have a Batman birthday party next year? Is also surprisingly not an emergency. I want to be a doctor when I grow up is admirable, but it's not an emergency when you're 6 years old. So the problem is that the list of things that are not an emergency is infinite, and you cannot possibly itemize all the things that your kids will think are emergencies that aren't. So you have to go about it the other way and define what an emergency is. So I thought it was fairly obvious to define an emergency as something that involved blood, fire, or water. That sounds pretty straightforward, doesn't it? But no, because a blood emergency does not mean that you prick your finger and there are two molecules of red liquid on your fingertip. It means that there's a gushing artery and we need to call 911, okay? Water does not mean that somebody dropped an ice cube on the kitchen floor and didn't pick it up, and there's now a puddle the size of a dime that they don't want to bend over and wipe up. A water emergency is more along the lines of someone left the stopper stopped in the upstairs bathroom sink that's the only sink in the history of bathroom sinks not to have an overflow hole, and they left the faucet dripping while you were away from the house for 3 hours, and you walk in the front door, and there's water dripping through the living room ceiling fan. I'm very sorry to report that this is not a hypothetical. This is an actual case study, one of those mistakes I tested. Okay, I thought fire was fairly straightforward. Fire emergency. But no. One day, I was working in my office. I was getting so much done. And the kids were quite like, this is great, this is working, man, I'm good at this, you know. And I start hearing noise, but you know, when you live with four boys, noise is a relative thing. I have people come visit me and they're like, you know, shouldn't you take care of that? And I'm like, no, there's nobody falling down the stairs yet, we're good. But the noise began to escalate and I thought maybe I should go see what's happening. So I open my office door and go into the living room and the boys are all totally freaking out. There's a cat running madly around the living room. I think this was the time we had maybe six cats. We're down to three now. And I said, boys, what on earth is going on? And they said, Snowball's on fire. Snowball, God rest him, although it wasn't this particular incident that sent him to his well-earned rest, let me specify, used to lie on the hearth rug in front of the wood stove. Used to. And a spark had popped out and landed on his back. And he did not actually go into flames, but allow me a little bit of hyperbole here, you know. And so the cat was freaking out because the spark was scorching him. And let me just add a bonus tip here. You do not want to smell singed cat fur. Do not try this at home. Take my word for it. So the cat's freaking out because the spark is scorching his back. The kids are freaking out because they think the cat's going to go up in flames. And now I'm freaking out because I'm thinking more along the lines of, I love the cat, but if he goes under the sofa and the sofa ignites, the whole house is going to go up in flames. So my third son managed to capture the cat. He extinguished the spark with his thumb, and it only scorched him just a tiny bit. He was quite a hero. It took 30 minutes. My second son is a real animal lover. If you know Dickon from The Secret Garden, that was my Andrew. He was in hysterics, and he's not emotional, but he was in hysterics over the cat. So I finally got him calmed down, and I assembled them all. I'm like, guys, what were you thinking? Why didn't you tell me the cat was on fire? And they all looked like perfectly innocent little angels, and they said, we didn't want to interrupt your work, Mom. So however you try to define emergencies and whatever rules you establish for interruptions with your kids, always make sure that they know that a flaming cat does, in fact, constitute an emergency. This may, in fact, be the most important thing you hear all weekend. Now, if your children are not going to interrupt you, they have to do stuff themselves, right? You need to teach them responsibility, independence, and initiative. And I'm only going to hit this lightly because there's some other things I want to cover. A whole chapter on this in the book. Teaching your kids to be responsible, it builds confidence and character. If you give them meaningful household chores, for example, they're making a real contribution to the family, but you can't be a perfectionist about it. You have to accept that their level of cleaning is probably not going to match your white glove standards, if in fact you still own any white gloves. You can divide and rotate repetitive tasks so that one year, two of my boys took turns. Whoever had the biggest dishwashing job in the kitchen had to feed the cats. And whoever had the cat litter box job had to put away the clean dishes. So, you take the bad job and the easy job, and you kind of balance them out. You can also assign work to the youngest child who's capable of doing it. Has anyone besides me ever piled most of the work on the oldest kid because it was easiest and they were the best at it? Yeah, okay. I see a few guilty nods. That's the easiest thing, but if you train them from a young age, then they all become very capable. My kids actually run our whole household, and as they're growing up and leaving for college, I'm looking around going, where's my staff? I need my staff. Because they have learned, they do all of the yard work, all of the pet care, all of the house cleaning, all of the laundry except for my personal clothing, most of the errands now that I have three other drivers on the family, and quite a lot of the cooking. And so when they're gone to visit their dad or their grandmother, I'm like, oh my goodness, it takes so much time to do all this stuff. My staff is gone. I expect to have very grateful daughters-in-law someday because these boys know how to run a house. But again, this is something I've been building for years. They range from 15 to 24. So if your kids range from 5 to 14, you're not there yet, but it's worth the effort to teach them. Now, we're going to talk about everyone else because that's where other things come from. When you spend most of your time at home, other people think you don't have anything to do. You know, oh yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about. How busy can you possibly be, right? You're just at home with your kids. So people are going to ask you to do things, or they're going to come by and interrupt to chat, or ask you to watch for the dishwasher repairman, or whatever the case may be. And they can take every single bit of your time if you let them. Now, it's important to show God's love by serving people, but you don't have to be available on demand for everyone because you will have nothing left for your family. That's why you have to figure out priorities and focus on them. Have an intentional plan for serving others and create some boundaries for yourself, just like you set boundaries for your kids. Remember, you only have 24 hours in each day, and saying yes to one thing means saying no to everything else at the same time. This includes things that other people ask you to do. What is the biggest source of interruptions outside of your family? Oh, she has my telephone, usually, for most people, whether that's texting or phone calls. I love this description from a guy named Lance Morrow writing in Time magazine. He says, the telephone call is a breaking and entering, which we invite by having telephones in the first place. Someone unbidden barges in, and for an instant or an hour, usurps the ear and upsets the mind's prior arrangements. That's a great description of what that ringing phone does. Did you know that you do not have to answer every phone call immediately when it rings? Most people know that by now, but I don't think... Some of us respond like Pavlov's dog to the ringing bell, and we just answer that phone regardless of what we're doing. Why? Do you answer the phone when you're in the shower? No. And the world doesn't end, did it? So if you don't answer the phone while you're doing your phonics lesson, the world's not going to end from that either. Obviously, there are exceptions if you have, you know, someone who's traveling or somebody who's ill, but you can't take every incoming call. I think pretty much everybody has caller ID and voicemail now, but those are good ways to delegate those interruptions and to save them for later. One of my favorite things is to reply to telephone messages by email. I know, like I said, I've been homeschooling for 18 years, so the younger generation may prefer to text rather than email or even Facebook message or whatever. But when you can do that, you can control the time of your response and how long it takes. I learned this the hard way when a mom in our co-op called me about one of her kids in my class and spent 90 minutes, not 19, but 90, an hour and a half, detailing to me every activity of all of her other 8 kids as well as the one who was in my class. That was my fault, not hers. I never took another phone call from her. I let her leave messages and replied by email, and then I talked to her at co-op. Home business requires phone boundaries even if you have customers. Texting, the same thing. Texting has created a culture of the expectation of instant availability 24/7. Turn that thing off sometimes. The world survived. I've recently learned to text. I got my first smartphone about 4 years ago. Before that, I had the same dumb phone for 8 years. So these tools are great servants, but don't let them become your masters. A doorbell. Do you know you can also ignore the doorbell? That's harder for me to do because there's somebody actually standing there. But if I wasn't expecting them and I don't know who it is, I'm probably not going to go to the door, not even necessarily to look through the peephole, because my friends who should come over to my house know that you don't just drop in, right? Especially because I have a home business. I've heard of people who put a note on the door saying something like, "We're homeschooling until 3 this afternoon. Please come back after that." Or I've heard of people saying, answer the door with your work in your hands. If you're washing dishes, have a wet dish towel and a plate in your hand so they see that you're in the middle of something. Because otherwise there are people who will come in and take the rest of your afternoon hostage. Internet. I love email. I am a Facebook addict. Hi, I'm Mary Jo. I'm a Facebook addict. These are great tools, even though they take a lot of bashing. A lot of people think they're fake relationships. I've actually found they used wisely, that Facebook can be a great way to build new relationships and to strengthen long distance relationships with friends that you just can't physically see in person all the time, but you can keep up. So they can be a wonderful tool, but they can also be a huge hindrance. You have to discipline yourself, because if you're not careful, a quick check of Facebook could eat up an hour before you know it. Yes, unfortunately, this is another non-hypothetical example. I've done that way more times than I would really like to confess. A lot of people advocate not going online first thing in the morning because that's prime time. Now, because of the nature of my business, I do check email first thing in the morning because often I work late at night and then some of my clients are real early birds. And by the time I get up and start work, they've sent me a whole new batch of information that I need. So I do check that, but I try not to get caught up in all the other messages and not on Facebook. Social media, use it in moderation. You can stay in touch with friends all over the world. You can use it for relaxation, fellowship, business networking, even ministry. I pray for a lot of people through prayer requests that I get on Facebook, but it can also be a distraction and hindrance. So remember the value of your time. Use it wisely and use it to focus on your priorities. And finally, remember that God is in control. Sometimes interruptions just happen despite our best laid plans, don't they? Pray for discernment to know how to respond in each situation. Sometimes the appropriate response is to ignore the interruption and continue doing the task that you're already focusing on. Sometimes an interruption is a signal to be sensitive to God's timing and an opportunity to serve somebody who really needs you. C.S. Lewis said, "What one calls the interruptions are precisely one's real life, the life God is sending one day by day." So that, in some ways, almost sounds like a contradiction to some of the things I've been saying earlier. Again, it takes judgment and discernment to figure out how to respond. I found this in a book by Elizabeth Elliot, but this is actually, she was quoting an English nun named Janet Erskine Stewart, who had a wonderful attitude of how God's providence responds applies to interruptions. This nun's assistant described it this way. She delighted in seeing her plan upset by unexpected events, saying it gave her great comfort, and that she looked on such things as an assurance that God was watching over her stewardship, was securing the accomplishment of his will, and working out his own design. Whether she traced the secondary causes to the prayer of a child, the imperfection of an individual, to obstacles arising from misunderstandings, or to interference of outside agencies, she was joyfully and gracefully ready to recognize the indication of God's willing hand and to allow herself to be guided by it. Now, that was a long quote to read, but I want to go back to some of the key ideas there. God was watching over her stewardship. Isn't that a great and comforting way to think of it when these interruptions come along and when they are things we have to respond to, instead of getting frustrated, if we can remember that God is watching over our stewardship of the work he has for us to do and the time that he has given us. That's very comforting. And I also like the description of her as being joyfully and gracefully ready to accept those interruptions that came her way. So I want to encourage you. Here's your homework lesson. How do you respond to interruptions? Think about your attitudes and your emotions as well as your outward response, and consider maybe how you may need to change about what you may need to change about how you respond. Think about what kinds of interruptions you encounter most often. Maybe there were one or two or three things that I mentioned that you're like, yeah, that's the thing that drives me crazy. And think about a plan for how you can deal with those in a better way. What can you do to avoid or prevent those things that interrupt you commonly? Think especially about how you're going to set boundaries, not only for your kids, but also for techno interruptions like email and phone and text and so on. And then think about how well you balance accessibility and boundaries with your kids and what changes you may need to make. Now, I want we'll have a couple of minutes for questions and answers, but I want to invite you to come to my two sessions tomorrow, which are also related to time management and not getting overwhelmed by what you have to do. The morning session at 10:30 is called How Do You Do It All? It's particularly about balancing family life and home business, but a lot of it applies even if you don't have a home business. And at 1:30 in the afternoon is Freedom, which is strategies to help you flourish at home. Also, if you want to stop by my table just to chat or to look at the book, you'll see this beautiful bright orange flower on this great big banner. You can hardly miss it. It's almost right in the middle of the convention center. If you want to purchase a copy of the book this weekend, I'll be glad to sign it for you. But also, you'll get a bonus that I only give at conventions, which is a free copy of my downloadable home study course called How Do You Do It All? And of course, the answer is you don't. Nobody does. That was an early version of the material that eventually developed into this book. And the reason it's a cool bonus is that it has 7 hours of audio recordings. So it covers maybe 70% of the same material that's in the book. But you can listen to it because there's not an audiobook version available yet. Then maybe there will be someday if I can speak long enough without losing my voice, right? Well, I held out this time. So I want to encourage you to stop by, and we have a minute for just a couple of, got 5 minutes for questions, Rebecca. Oh, also, and Rebecca is passing out my sign-up sheet, which I forgot to do earlier. I have a newsletter. It's a hypothetical newsletter. I'm certainly not going to spam you because I haven't written the first issue yet. However, if you sign up for the newsletter, priorities, right? It never made it to the top of the list. Eventually, it's going to be encouragement, practical tips, updates, special offers, and so on. If you sign up for it, you will receive a free ebook called From Frazzle to Focus, which is just a few practical strategies like I've been sharing today. So does anybody have a question? I think we have just a few minutes for our questions. Anybody? Yes. Email, yes. Yes, it's an email newsletter only. Thank you for making me clarify that. Anyone else? Any questions? Okay. Yeah, I've given out a lot of information, so you're probably like on info overload. I will be down at my booth until the exhibit hall closes this evening, and I'll be around tomorrow in between the sessions. And I thank y'all so much for coming today, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend at the convention.